Anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, wherein we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K. Today, we're joined by a jiu-jitsu black belt. Please welcome Miko Hitonen. How are you today, Miko?
Thanks, brother, and happy to be here. And I'm here in beautiful Cornwall, so everything okay. And I wake up fresh today and looking good so far, my brother.
Very nice. Tell me about the gym. How long have you been going there, and how long have you been working at the Kurno gym?
So this is a fairly new thing. So I came here actually first time in the summer, but now I came here for 2.5 weeks, and from January I will be here permanently. So I will be go back in Spain once in a while, but I will be teaching here permanently from January 11th. So this is a fairly new thing, but I'm excited, and the facility is excellent. We have ice baths here, and we have saunas and gyms and everything. So it's really amazing place, and I'm happy to be here.
When I was researching you, your physical condition right now, you're jacked, bro. Has anyone ever accused you of steroids?
No. And I'm pretty natural. I have always been in a good shape because I have a nice diet. I eat pretty good food, and I train every day. So that's the reason why I'm in a good physical health. And of course, I'm a jiu-jitsu teacher, so I need to be in a good shape so I can do my job. So I take my job really seriously also.
Kind of a hard question, but a completely valid one. What's one part of BJJ that people don't completely understand that is stopping their progression?
They have this competitive mindset while they train. So everybody's kind of, okay, today I tapped this guy, today I get tapped. I think that's not relevant when we are training. We are not there to kind of competing each other. We are there to train. So I think that's what many times limits you. You're trying to win all the rounds. And when you're training, you don't need to win all the rounds. We are there to learn. So you can explore, you can do all kinds of stuff, but stop trying to win all rounds, all sparring rounds. I think that's my answer.
Some coaches I've seen, they really favor just being in the gi, and then some of them only say no gi because it's not applicable being in the gi. What's your opinion? I see you in both forms of BJJ. What do you like better, and why do you do both?
For me, I have been since starting of my career about 11 years ago, I have been doing 50-50. So my coaches were Demi and Myers black belts, old school guys. So we did no gi and gi. So I love to train both, and I don't kind of understand this headbutting. Okay, you need to do this, you need to do this. In my mind, I do both. I love both. And there is sometimes, for example, when I'm injured, for example, I had a rib injury. Now I'm just healing about it. And for me, When I'm recovering, it was easier to do gi training because I can control the pace a little bit more. I can pin the guy down, and instead of wrestling, submission wrestling, no gi, it's more dynamic. So, but in my opinion, you should be training both about 50-50. So I think that's the best option.
How did you injure your rib?
I was in a triangle, I was attacking the triangle, and the guy smashed me and a little bit on sideways, and just 3 centimeters, my rib pop off. So I blame myself. So I need to let go of the triangle earlier and switch the direction. But sometimes you cannot avoid injuries in jiu-jitsu. It just happens. But it's also an art. How do we can train while injured? So it's totally fine. It's part of the game.
Is that the worst injury you've sustained?
No. My body is pretty much fucked up, but it's okay. The worst thing, I think, maybe my shoulder, both shoulders has, because I was fighting with this sambo guy, and I use lapels a lot when I use kimono. So I wrap his head with my lapel, and he kind of lift me up, and we landed on top of my shoulder, and boom, everything went pretty bad for my shoulder. But again, part of the game. So not the best part of jiu-jitsu, but we just need to, you know, live with it. So no worries at all.
I spoke to a black belt in jiu-jitsu, Steve Hordinsky III. He's in the mountain region. He's a very good coach. He's been training heaps of UFC fighters. When I was speaking to him, we were talking about the relationship about how samboists come into MMA and dominate. We've been seeing them have a lot of success. but these gi jiu-jitsu grapplers are not finding the same success that a samboist would. Even though they're both in the gi, they're both grapplers. Why do you think this is happening? Do you think that samboists just have a better understanding of chain wrestling? Or do you think that people are just not applying the gi jiu-jitsu correctly into MMA?
Excellent question. Excellent question. And I think it's because sambo, especially in combat sambo, there is going to be kicking and hitting. So it's kind of a more of a complete martial art, because in jiu-jitsu we focus heavily. 95% is everything happens on the ground. So if you are the only gi guy, you should add other stuff in your game so you can transform to that, to MMA. But yeah, I think that's it, because we focus so heavily on the ground. But I think it's still important. Good example for Mighty Mouse Johnson, who is a 1FC champion, great MMA fighter, and he just went to a gi world championship in a masters and won. And he was like, this is really important to also train gi so you can be a complete martial artist. But the comparison against sambo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I think that's the difference, because they have also punches and kicks. But otherwise, the ground game, there is a lot of similarities. But I think that's the biggest difference, because I have never trained in jiu-jitsu gym like punches and kicks. So we have been doing some kind of MMA entries, some kind of fakes and entries. But in sambo, it's consistently where they do kicks and hits also. I think that's easier to kind of transform to MMA.
A controversial topic was with Mighty Mouse. So there was that bodybuilder. He's like 265 pounds, 130 kg, Bradley Martin. Let's say, seeing that Mighty Mouse just won the first place in his grappling tournament, let's say they had a fight or they had a grappling match. Do you think at that point, if it's a 130 kg guy going up against 62 kg Mighty Mouse, who do you think comes on top?
Definitely Mighty Mouse will win that fight. It's not, of course, the guy is huge, he's strong, but when you're a professional martial artist, it's a total different ballgame. He starts to swing, and probably Mighty Mouse will, you know, level change, go down, single leg, double leg, low single, whatever. If the fight goes ground, and when the fight goes ground, there is no chance. Even though you're 230 kilos, I think Mighty Mouse would be, he's one of the best MMA fighters in the world. And if we were 10 kilos less, I think he will still beat the bodybuilder guy.
Why did you start BJJ? Why did you start training in the first place?
Because I was lost in my life. I used to do wrestling when I was younger, and then I stopped wrestling when I was 15 years old, and I did a lot of bad decisions in my life. And then I was kind of floating on my life, and I didn't have anything that would define me. I used to play football, but when that stopped, it was pretty hard for me, because I felt like empty. I didn't have anything. So I needed something that will be defining me. And because I wrestled when I was younger, so jiu-jitsu, I was like, okay, I'm going to try jiu-jitsu. And the first training, when I tried jiu-jitsu, I fell in love immediately. And I have been training since then. And it has been now, let's say, 11, 12 years about. So
how long did it take you to get your black belt? Because I looked at your social media and I saw you were purple in 2020, I believe it was. And then since then, it's only been 3 years, and I saw you with your black belt. That's very quick for most BJJ competitors.
Yeah, it took me a little bit more than 10 years. So I was purple belt exactly two years and 1 month. And then I was also brown belt a little bit more than two years. So it took me a total 11 years. So you probably, yeah, I think I got my purple belt in 2019, and 21, I got my brown belt, and 23, I got my black belt. So about 11 years total. So rough, long journey, but I'm happy and proud, and I'm still here.
I love your Instagram tutorials. I like the really weird chokes and weird holds, like the calf slicer that you demonstrated, as well as the clock choke. Why should people learn creative submissions over just learning the fundamentals, like your triangle, your armbar, and your rear naked choke?
Because you want to be an unpredictable fighter. You want to do stuff that people are not expecting. I'm a firm believer of strong basics. So you should be able to do the arm bars, triangles, and everything. But you need to be able to, you know, attack from multiple different attacks. And again, it makes martial arts much more fun. I can play my A game. I have my A game if I need to really, I want to want the sparring. I play my A game, I do my knee slice and basic techniques. But jiu-jitsu is much more fun when you try new stuff. And I think that that also makes you more completed fighter when you try new stuff and fail and error. I'm a black belt, but I sometimes, you know, I try all the times all kind of stuff and I end up in a bottom with label on my hand. But, oh, shit, it didn't went. But it's fun and you learn by doing that. That kind of stuff. So experimental jiu-jitsu, I love it. I love it. And in every martial arts, so try to do different things and that will kind of open up your view a little bit.
I'm going to ask you a funny question now. So you're always decked out in tattoos. When did this become a thing that you loved and why did you start getting tattoos?
Thank you for the question. So, actually, I got my first tattoo in 1995. So I had...
You're joking. 1995, I was born 2003.
Okay, so I'm 43, so I was 15 1995 already. So I had my first tattoo then, and since that day I have been getting tattoos, and now I'm pretty filled up. But I love tattoos because that's my way to express myself. And my tattoos are not for anybody else. They are for me, and they express me. You know, I have, let's say, 80% of my tattoos are pretty bad, but I don't care. They are part of my journey, and they just tell my story. So for me, it's a way to express myself, and I love them.
Sometimes when I'm stuck in an armbar or I'm stuck in a triangle, I try and muscle my way out. I don't try and use technique. I know, I'm sorry. I try and muscle my way out. So what is the best way to escape somebody's grip without using your strength?
That's a hard one, because if somebody is able to lock the position, let's say, for example, a triangle. If they lock the triangle, you are basically too late. But try to kind of trying to learn to think about more of a fighting the position, not the submission. So start to find and recognize those situations where they're going to start to lift their hips and they start to go, for example, in the triangle. And for example, the triangle, posture up, lift up. So try to kind of think one step before, like try to avert the positions and try to recap, okay, I getting caught on triangle all the time. And then when you focus on that, you will see like, okay, the pattern is happening and you might be able to see it a little bit earlier when it's coming and you can start to react a little bit earlier. So then you don't need to muscle your way out. So try to be on time.
What's your schedule looking like nowadays, coach? How long are you training per day?
It depends so much because I have so many stuff to do nowadays, but I still train every day and I try to teach every day. So let's say normally my day, I train by myself, let's say one training, and I do one or two private. So about 3 hours of jiu-jitsu is pretty normal for me during the days. And when I feel, you know, for example, Wednesday, I felt really, really like low energy. And then I decided I need to have a day off. So I follow my body with that one pretty roughly. So, but yeah, I think 3 hours of day of jiu-jitsu, that's normal. And then we have our other businesses here. We have the Löylyte health recovery spa here, and we have our other things. So I'm investing my time also in those stuffs. And then I'm traveling a lot with my other business partner Sami also. We're gonna visit other gyms around the world and just like I have a busy life, but I love it, but I cannot skip jiu-jitsu. So if I don't do jiu-jitsu, I start to depress immediately. So I need to add that in my schedule every day. So at least I'm going to do some short rounds or whatever. But every day I'm training at least, let's say, 1 hour.
Your social media is growing. Your reputation's growing. You just mentioned there about your business goals that you're trying to achieve. So what do you see for the next 3 years? What career and business goals do you have?
So we are here. We in Cornwall. I'm co-owning here a few of the businesses with David, Becky, Mark, and Simon here in Cornwall. So I see those businesses are growing. Then I'm gonna start later. I'm probably gonna start also my own podcast. Let's see, because I love to talk with people. But that's not my like main. Let's say I might do one episode a week or something like that. And then just, I don't know, let's see what it comes at, because I had no idea 3 years ago so that this is going to happen where I'm now. I'm talking, for example, with you and basically living my dreams. So let's see how it goes, but I'm not going to stop. I'm just going to try to enjoy the journey and I'm not going to stop. I'm going to be the same guy. And even if I have 3 million followers, I'm going to be the exact the same guy and talk about my feelings and my insecurities and everything. So I just want to inspire people and train jiu-jitsu and teach jiu-jitsu every day.
Is the double armbar something that we can actually get in a competition, or do you think that a higher level opponent will see it coming?
100% didn't see it coming. It's super hard, but you can surprise white belt sometimes with that.
How often do you land it?
If I want, I can land a few times, but of course it relies heavily the guy, like for example extending the arm. So, but I use, remember always that these attacks, for example, let's say the double armbar, I might go for the double armbar, but the double armbar is not actually my goal. I just do it for a reaction. Action reaction is the name of the game. So I create an action so I get a reaction. You know, that's my goal. But realistically, I don't even remember. Maybe 6 months ago, last time when I was hitting it. So it's not a high successful rate move. But you can still do it. I have been submitting blue belts and I think even purple belts sometimes with that. So depending on the situation, but at least we're gonna get a reaction and good laugh.
Coach Charles Harriet was on the show Black Belt. He's a legend. He was telling me that he was really focusing on his judo throws that particular week, and he says that black belts find something and obsess over it and try and learn a new technique or try and master a basic movement that they haven't mastered before. So what recently in the last week or two have you really focused on that you're trying to get perfect?
I have been working a lot with this kind of lapel seat belt back control. So I'm learning and I'm teaching how we can create, because when we are on somebody's back, okay, basic control, seat belt, nice, works perfectly. So I'm teaching and learning now when we are using my right side lapel, and I'm not gonna attack, but I'm feeding it over the shoulder so I can have a kind of a lapel seat belt and what that options give me. So I have been using this kind of a lapel seat belt control. We have been playing with that last few weeks.
Friend of the show, undefeated lightweight in Bellator, Archie Colgan. He's not a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's a wrestling dominant fighter, but he understands the jiu-jitsu component of the game. So when he gets top positions on black belts, they can't submit him in the cage. And he controls them in this top position, even though he's a white belt or a blue belt. So why do you think that jiu-jitsu people have such difficulty with a wrestler that knows how to keep top position, knows how to keep that dominant top position? Why do you think this is happening?
Good question, but the thing is, I think because I was a wrestler when I was young, and wrestling was my first actual martial art and actually any sport what I did, because wrestlers are really good at pinning people down, so they don't. And I think the answer is because there's no space under a wrestler. You know, they know how to pin you in the way that there is no space. I cannot create any space, and because I need to create space so I can attack or defend or escape, I need the space and I need to create something. But the wrestlers are really good at pinning people down and controlling their body. So wrestling is excellent for MMA. So, and as we can see, Khabib and all the high level wrestlers, they are doing pretty good in MMA. So I think that's the reason, because they don't give us anything. There is no space. They're pinning so good and they know how to control all body. So I cannot release my legs. I cannot. They just gradually climb higher and they control you. They're like anacondas, so tough opponents for sure.
In MMA, we've been seeing so many people get gifted their black belt, and some people say that it's undeserving because there are such a surplus of black belts, and you can't really argue with it. They say they're a black belt, you have to believe it, and then you see them get submitted. So I want to ask you, how do we spot fake black belts, and should the ranking systems be a little bit more difficult now that the game's evolved?
Excellent question again. So because it's overall, I believe that I have personally never met people who doesn't can carry the belt, but there is also aka fake black belts. But I don't know, we need to just trust the process and keep the standards high. But again, let's say for example MMA fighter who is a great grappler and gets his black belt on a octagon, it's the coach's decision. His professor decided to give him the belt. So I don't know about the comparison, but it's always the professor makes the decision. But I believe that we should keep the standards pretty high in jiu-jitsu, and certainly I keep them high. So I'm not going to give any kind of belts to anybody, blue belt, purple belt, brown belt, any belts, if they don't fit a certain criteria. So that is because I want them to really, because in jiu-jitsu, let's say for example, you're a decent grappler, but you have your black belt, but you are not in black belt level. It's going to be hard life for you because then there's always expectations. And when you go to the train, it's hard. They're like, okay, this guy's a black belt, but he's not so good. So it's easier to be lower belt, but in a better level. So it would be perfectly like a purple belt, but you're really good. That's easier than you are a black belt. It's like you have a Ferrari, but you have a Renault engine on Ferrari. It's like, okay, it looks good, but shit, it doesn't drive so nice. So,
what's your F1 team?
Formula One team. Because I'm from Finland, so back in the day it was Ferrari when Kimi was driving Ferrari. But I don't know. I don't have any favorites at the moment. So I just watch all motorsports also. So I have no favorites at the moment.
There's always a coach that has a lasting impression on people that they got the most out of. So for you, who do you think, who was that coach that really impacted your style and career?
I think my first coaches, Jasse and Marek, they're Demian Myers black belts, they were influencing harshly. But of course, my current professor, Santeri Lilius, two-time ADCC European Trials winner and probably the best grappler in Europe at the moment. I think Santeri has the biggest influence in my game. He's a great fighter and great man. So I think I'm going to say Santeri definitely.
Have you worked with Damian Meyer?
No, I have even never met Damian, but my first coaches, they are Damian Meyer's black belts. And I trained with them my first, let's say, 3.5 years of my career. And that's my base because my base is really old school. You know, we take the guy to the ground. We stay on top. We don't go on our back if we don't have to. And like old school jiu-jitsu, that's my base and I love it. So, but I would love to meet him one day. So hopefully that will happen.
What's your favorite submission?
Back triangle.
Why the black triangle?
Because I think it's a super dominant position. So if you're in a back is a great position. But if you have a back triangle, basically there is not so many options the other guy to get away from. It's a super dominant position. So I like to play with that one. And my favorite technique, switches. I still love baseball jokes and all kinds of jokes, but I have been working with the back triangle a lot and with the cross wrist control. So I go underhook side, I grab the wrist, and then I kind of a hip escape away and the guy falls down, and then I swing my leg over the shoulder and do a grip switch and we are on the back triangle. So at the moment it's the back triangle. I love because it's so dominant position. If you hit it, you are somebody's back and you have a triangle on, so game over, baby.
How many calories do you think you burn per jiu-jitsu session?
No idea. Let's say 500. I don't know. But I know this. So in Spain, when we were training and it was super, super hot and we were sweating a lot, and then I'm losing 1 liter of sweat in 1 liter of sweat in 1 hour. So if I do a 3 hour session, I lose 3 kilos. So that's pretty fucking insane. And when you do it every day, so you go to the gym, I'm 78 kilos, and I stop the training at 75, then I go home, eat again, and bam, bam, every day the same, boom, boom, boom. So,
where were you in Spain? Is that like a little sauna because it's so hot there?
No, because we are living in southern Spain, so it was really hot there, and it's actually the biggest martial arts gym in whole Andalusia, the Lilius Barnard, where we train, but southern Spain, it's so hot there, so summertime, 45 easily, so it's just so hot, so we were sweating, and because I have even never trained in a place where they have air conditioning, so I have no idea, so old school, but that's why it's pretty rough, and especially with the gi in the summer, but again, think about it, like summer, if you do no gi and it's really hot, then it's slippery, and everybody's sweating, and you cannot get grips, but with the gi, you still have the grips, so again, even though it's hot, I think it's good to train both. Not like, okay, we do only no-gi in summers. Don't, because then after 5 minutes, everybody's so slippery and it's like training with soap bars. So sometimes also train with the gi in a summer because you're still going to have those grips.
Have you never trained in a place with air conditioning?
I was once, because last year I was teaching Serbian national team in IMAF World Championship, MMA Amateur Championship in Abu Dhabi. So there in the Cobra Muay Thai, Cobra Gym, they had air conditioning and it was weird. But only 2 weeks I have been trying. And I told the guys, like, this is my first time to train a place where I have air conditioning. They didn't believe it, but that's true. That's true. So, but for me, everything goes.
On the show, every single black belt coach has their different opinions on this topic. Who do you think has the best jiu-jitsu in MMA right now?
It's hard. Damian is not fighting anymore. I would say Damian, but I don't know. There is so many good guys. Oliveira has a great jiu-jitsu.
I like to say Pantoja is a really good pick because
Yeah.
his style is beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm an MMA fan also. I watch almost all the Bellators, all the UFCs, and I try to, I don't have so many favorites. I just love the kind of a good fight. And if somebody does something exceptional, I'm happy for them. And I just love to watch all kind of fighting. And I watch more MMA than I watch like a normal, for example, IBJJF competitions or something like that. I don't watch that so much. I do like sub only tournaments, but I watch MMA much more than just plain jiu-jitsu because I'm also a fight fan.
The sequels coming up against Islam Makhachev and Charles Oliveira, the grappling in the first match was very interesting because if you rewatch the first match, it's now shown we were thinking that Islam was more of a grappling-based fighter, which he is, but now as time's gone on, his defensive striking statistics are off the charts. They're the highest out of anyone in the division. His striking, his offense striking, he just beat one of the best strikers via head kick in his last performance. So his striking's being beautiful right now. To be honest, I think that Charles Oliveira should attack this fight from a purely grappling standpoint. I know that this is a risky thing to do, but if you rewatch the first fight, every single time it got into a jiu-jitsu exchange, Islam Makhachev seemed like he understood the wrestling components. But that jiu-jitsu component that Charles was dragging him down into his guard and then working from there, he was finding success. And it seemed like that was the area of the fight where if he were to put all of his chips into, he might have won the fight. So now that the sequel's coming up, what do you think about the grappling exchanges? What do you think Charles can do that Islam can't?
Fuck, man, this is a good question. It's gonna be hard, and let's see how Charles is, mentally prepared, because that was a tough tap, man. He didn't probably see that coming, and he lost a lot of sleep after that match. But I think he should maybe try to play from the guard and attack from there, because he has one of the best triangles and he has long legs and stuff like that. So let's see what is Charles' game plan. But I think he would find maybe success. I don't know. Play guard from the bottom and try to use those long legs. Let's see. It's going to be super interesting, and I'm not going to bet on that match because I have no idea.
Personally, coach, I like attacking the neck. That's probably my go-to favorite body part to attack because it's probably my highest accuracy finish. But for you, what do you think is your highest accuracy finish? What body part do you think you favor the best?
I go for the neck also all the time. That's because there can be always a tough guy who doesn't tap on the arm bar. And because I come from the old school background, so I come from the kind of a self-defense line. So in a street situation, if you need to defend yourself and you put somebody on the arm bar, you can rip the arm away and they will still continue. But if you have a nice choke on, the guy goes to sleep, fight is over, everybody goes home, done deal. But yeah, I attack a lot of chokes, and also I use a lot of kind of kimuras, but I use kimuras for sweeps and transitions. But I go for the neck 80% of the time. And even if I'm bottom, I go for the neck. So I love different chokes and strangles also.
I saw your work with BJJ Fanatics. I want to ask you, when did you get invited? Who asked you to collaborate? And are you going to continue to work with BJJ Fanatics?
Yeah, so basically I did my first instructional with BJJ Fanatics. I think it was 3 years ago. It's called Lapel Chokes from Everywhere. It was just a little bit after I got my brown belt. And actually my coach told me, like, Mikko, you should send them a message. And actually I sent them a message and they were like, fuck yeah, let's do it this together. And actually it has sold a lot, the Lapel Chokes from Everywhere. So that was my first one. By the way, I love to work with them. Super professional company, and all the best. They are amazing. And then I did my no-gi chokes from Everywhere. That's pretty recent. And now I think I'm going to go back to the gi. My idea is I'm going to do gi, no-gi, no-gi. And I'm not sure yet, but I think I'm going to do something that is related with labels again. So maybe like escaping and defending positions with labels. So how we can use the label if big guys are smashing us, and how we can do sweeps and transitions and survive on the bottom with the help of lapels. So I think that's going to be the subject of my next instruction with, and of course I'm going to continue with BJJ Fanatics.
Miko, where can we find those instructionals for the people listening right now? If they want to buy it, where do they go?
Go BJJ Fanatics and just search bar. You can just search Miko and you will find those balls. And it's labeled chokes from everywhere and no gi chokes from everywhere. So the name is, you can remember the name, but you just search my name from BJJ Fanatics and I would much appreciate that. But you can find them from there.
Most people, they don't want to give all the secrets away. I'll ask you a hard question. What position do you not like being in?
Let's see. Everything on the bottom sucks, but I'm a lazy fucking fighter, so I give up positions all the time, and then I need to struggle my way out. So I would rather stay on top. But let's say with the good guys, I don't want to be mount bottom. They can fucking pin me down, and sometimes I give up positions too easily because, you know, I'm just having fun and I don't care. So, but mount bottom, not a fan.
When I was talking to Fabio Alano, he was saying someone like a Charles Oliveira could compete in an IBJJF and he would have great success even transitioning after MMA. So I want to ask you, is there any MMA fighters that you've personally worked with that really surprised you with how much knowledge they had in the BJJ department?
Most of the guys who have been training in our gym, they are really, 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 really good also in jiu-jitsu. But I think you need to have this solid ground game nowadays if you wanna really make it in MMA. So I think every fighter who are really investing their time to MMA should train everything. So jiu-jitsu, wrestling, stand up, Muay Thai, clinching, knees, everything. So, but not anything specific. Everybody who has been training, they are solid. They are solid on the ground also.
I really liked your shoulder ripper. I find that people in this north-south position do not dominate. They either hold the person for the control time, but they never attack chokes from it because they would move on to getting them into a sprawl position to go for the guillotine or to try and get back mount. But when the person is on their back and you've got the top position on top for the north-south, I liked, as I said, your shoulder ripper. Why do you think people don't attack from the north-south enough?
I don't know. I think because it's also that position that people don't train so much. Now when you talk about it, when I started to think, I don't even remember when I have been teaching that position last time, or somebody else has been teaching and I have been participating in the class. So I think it's because we don't train that enough, and actually we should be training it more because it's a great position. And sometimes, for example, when we're passing the guard, not stop on the side control. I love to circle all the way to north side. And it's great position to, you know, create chaining attacks. And you can go for example, the shoulder ripper. I think that's a unusual attack. And if you can just, you know, create a grip, it's a powerful move. So, but I think it's because we don't train that position so much. And I think we should train it more now, actually, while we're speaking. I understand that. So. Let's see, maybe I'm going to teach it today.
Do you train strikes from the position?
Sometimes, depending. If I do normal jiu-jitsu, then no. But if I'm working with somebody who is fighting with MMA or they have a, you know, goal to be an MMA, then we are always attacking some kind of a strikes. And we might. And I do a lot of rolling with the gloves on, especially with the guys who wants to do MMA, because I think it's really important because it's a different ball game to when you have your fingers and you can grab when you have your gloves on. So I like to roll with MMA guys with their gloves on. So
tell me about the relationship with your grappling and then doing that with the MMA glove. So when you do that, do you find that there's certain positions that you can't get to as well?
100%. Chokes are much, much harder because I have a bulky, you know, bulky glove in my hand. So, and actually in MMA situation, when I roll with MMA guys or with gloves, I do a lot more arm attacks. Because for example, let's say armbar, I can lock it nicely, the arm, so on top of the gloves. So I think I attack much more arms when we have the gloves on. And especially with I maybe my go-to with gloves is definitely some kind of a kimura attacks. But the chokes are much harder to sink in, much harder to sink in. And in all kinds of, because in jiu-jitsu you can sometimes you can scoop your arm under, and when you have a glove, it's different. You need to simplify some things.
Are you still competing in BJJ?
Hopefully, because last, let's say, four times when I have been signing for a competition, always some injury has come. And let's say last 4 months, I have had like five different injuries. So my body is, because I think I push myself too much. So if I stay healthy, I would love to compete, because now, especially when I'm pretty big, so most of the people already know me. So I would love to put myself on the platform and show people, you know, you just go there, you challenge yourself, win or lose. I don't care, but I would love to compete, and hopefully I can stay healthy. And let's see. I would love to compete. So hopefully next year we can make that happen.
Who's the best BJJ competitor or practitioner that you've ever had the pleasure to roll with?
I think still the best one who I ever rolled. Of course, we have been having a lot of great visitors in our gym, world champions and everything, but I still think my coach, Santeri Lilius, current ADCC European champion, I think he's the best. And he's just, when he decides, he's just so good. I cannot do basically anything. So it's fucking humbling always. You know, I'm a black belt and he's a black belt, and he's 10 years younger than me, but he's such a solid guy when he fights. I don't know. I'm going to say Santeri. So.
What's it about his game that is so effective? I understand that even holistically, you speaking on it now, he's got an understanding about every single position. But if you could pinpoint one thing that he does that other people don't do, what would you say it is?
His weight control is out of this world. His weight control, and he has the best knee cut pass in the world. And I think in ADCC trials, he did the same knee cut pass for, let's say, five people. And when he teaches that, there's like, okay, nothing special. It's just the basics, but he do it so good. So I think his weight distribution, and for example, he enters with confidence on leg entanglements, and people are, okay, grab my leg, but you are not gonna heel hook me. So the way how he controls his weight, so he's almost impossible to sweep, and you know, I cannot move the guy at all. So I think how he controls his weight is something exceptional.
Why should we use the spider guard, coach?
Spider guard is good. But and again, with the spider guard, we can kind of make the guy's arms like this, so it's easier to kind of unbalance them from upper body. But it's hard for your fingers, so I don't play so much spider guard anymore. I switch actually spider guard to lapels, because if I have spider guard like this and somebody rips it, boom, my fingers are gone. So when I have lapel grip, it's like this. If somebody takes the lapel away, boom, it's like a pistol grip. So it's better for my fingers. But I sometimes still use spider guard. And I think the easiest one, when you're going to start to learn to do triangles, I think the easiest entry is spider guard, go to the ground, and then just shoot your leg over the shoulder. So it's still solid, but I don't play it so much because my fingers, yeah, they are taking a beating. So, but I still love spider guard. I love it. I use it sometimes, but not so much anymore because I want to roll still in 20 years. And if I do it every day, not going to happen.
The community is split 50-50 about this topic. What do you think about a rubber guard? Is it useful or useless?
I think it's useful, but I don't use it. I was learning it a few years ago and we did a lot of work around it. But I don't use it. I might use Williams guard, a little bit like variation of rubber guard when you go under. I use that for setups, but I don't use rubber guard and I don't see it used anymore. You remember a few years ago, everybody was using it and everybody was playing it. But now it's like same as the buggy choke, for example. Everybody was buggy choking everybody like one year, 2 years ago. Now it's pretty much gone.
I forgot about it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's still, and depending on your body type, flexible guys, for sure. Use it, no worries at all. And if you can do it, do it. But I try to play with it, and I can of course do it, but I don't use it. I rather do Williams guard, and then I can isolate the arm, and then I can switch to this kind of omoplata variations and stuff like that. So I like to be more dynamic. I don't just. I think rubber guard is something that I don't use so often anymore.
if all of your grappling knowledge was taken from you in a split second and you had to strike, what would you say you're best at? Boxing, kickboxing, taekwondo? What striking art do you think your style most is most similar to?
I think because I did some Muay Thai when I was younger, so definitely that time, because I love, actually they have also a great Muay Thai academy in the same building where I am now, so I think I'm gonna start to do that, a little bit cross training also. And I love the aspect of the knees and the elbows, and Muay Thai is fucking brutal and I love it, so I choose Muay Thai, of course.
What's the weakest part of the body to attack?
Weakest part of the body, neck. Wrist locks also. Wrist is pretty bad.
What do you do when you attack the wrist?
Depending, but wrist locks are, because we can do wrist locks this way, or we can do wrist locks this way. So, because this bone here, so it's pretty fast, the attacking, but I do wrist locks sometimes. But again, I'm such a fucking nice guy, so I don't want to hurt anybody. So if I go wrist lock, because if you want to have a wrist lock to work, you need to be not snappy, but you need to kind of, if you do slowly wrist lock, you're probably not gonna get it. So that's why I don't do it so much, but great attack, great attack. So sometimes you can surprise people with it. So yeah, wrist and neck.
Do you go for the Basrutin body crunch? Do you go for that often, or is that just for show?
No, I fucking go for it. I go for it. And even last, actually, that was Tuesday. I was rolling with some blue belt with the gi, and I put the position in, but I let it go because, of course, I'm not gonna, do spinal lock on a blue belt. But I do it. I do it all the time. I do it all the time. So, and again, minimum what I'm gonna get a reaction. And actually, my idea was today I'm gonna film a little bit of techniques later. So I think I'm gonna do longer explanation of Basrutin body crunch to YouTube. So I'm gonna do longer video of the technique and break it down a little bit more on the for the YouTube for my YouTube channel. But yeah, certainly. And I call it sometimes even the pretzel. And because I'm the guy, if I get your Basrutin body crunch in Nogi, and I said, I'm gonna pretzel you, I'm gonna pretzel you. So it's just so fun. It's just so fun to hit that. So I use that almost every day.
The punch choke looks extremely painful. Do you think that's one of the most painful chokes? What technique do you think for you is the most painful?
I think that is pretty painful, and I love it, and I love it. And because when we do the punch choke, let's say, because my elbow is on the ground, it's like this, and this part is on the neck, and then I crouch it, and then I just create a pressure. And my goal is to bring my shoulder to my own fist. It's like a hydraulic machine. So punch choke is great, and also slicers. And I do this kind of bicep slicer from half guard. I learned it, let's say, 1 year ago, and I have been doing it all the time. Painful as. Oh, really painful. Slicers are also extremely painful. So, but when somebody gets me on the slicer, they really need to push it through so they could get the tap, because in jiu-jitsu we can take a lot of pain, but slicers are, oh shit, they hurt. They hurt a lot. So
Who was your first coach ever?
my first coach ever was Marek Kostecko and Jalse Junkkari. They were actually back in the day, they were purple and brown belts, and then they got their black belts from Demian Maia. So great guys, great Finnish guys. And we had an academy called Gaijin Academy at the Jiu-Jitsu, and that's where I started my career. And I trained with them 3.5 years. And then as a two-stripe blue belt, I went to train with Santeri Lilius in Lilius Barnard Martial Arts. And last 7 years, I have been with Santeri and got my blue belt a few months ago from him.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Miko, for coming on the show. Is there any final remarks you can give to the fans at home? Maybe some advice if they don't know what to do in life or if they're struggling. What do you have to say to these people?
Guys, always remember that if you have the courage to be who you are, people will love it. So no, they don't judge you by your characters. Just be who you are. Tell people how you feel, and believe in yourself, and eventually you will make it.
Follow Miko on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat on Spotify. We will see you guys next time. Bye bye.
Boom, baby.